Welcome to Breaking It Down with D'Anthony, with your host, Devin Anthony. Welcome to the latest edition of Breaking It Down with D'Anthony. I have a very special guest on the show today. It's actually my brother. His name's Everett. Introduce yourself, Everett.
How's it going, everybody? Name's Everett. Breaking It Down with D'Anthony's older brother.
And we actually have an early sponsorship today before we get in the show. A lot to talk about today. We got some Champions League, NBA, college basketball. I know it's over, but early predictions for next year. Some thoughts on the NFL draft, first five picks, and we also are heading into the NBA playoffs, so we're having some analysis on that. But before we do all that, we have a sponsorship from Everett. Take it away.
How's it going? So this past summer, me and my best friend, Jack Kostrinsky, we developed a online ACT prep course by the name of In-Depth Test Prep. Our slogan is it is made for students by students. You know, we spent hours going over each question, filming the answer to each question, and just providing answers and explanations in a completely online customizable course for a quarter of the price that you'll find anywhere else. So with test prep season coming, you know, around the corner, go ahead and check us out, In-Depth Test Prep.
And you can also use code D'Anthony for how much?
If you use code D'Anthony, you'll receive 10% off.
Perfect. All right. So that's our sponsorship for today. Thank you, Everett. So now let's dive in. First topic today, we're going to be talking about the Champions League final. It's been an interesting tournament this year. Barcelona, Juventus, both getting first round exits, or round of 16. It hurts to see the two goats go down there. But I think we'll still get a very good final, Man City versus Chelsea. Two young, promising teams, especially Chelsea. Man City beat Chelsea in January. 3-1, and then Thomas Tuchel, he arrived 4 weeks later, so Chelsea lost that game with Frank Lampard still in charge, but Tuchel's really, he's really turned Chelsea around, and they've just lost three games with him, that's it. Chelsea beat Man City 1-0 in the FA Cup semifinal in April behind a goal from Ziyech, and won last week 2-1 at home from a late Marcus Alonso game winner in stoppage time. So, you know, in my opinion, I think the UCL final, it's in Porto now. It was moved from Lisbon, I believe. Oh no, it was moved from Istanbul. So, you know, in Porto, it's definitely a fair game. They were trying to move it to England, but I think, you know, both fans being there, I think they're going to have over 20,000. So it's definitely a fair game. Both these teams have proven that they can beat each other this year. You know, City's just won the Premier League title. And they're looking for revenge against Chelsea, who's beat them the last two times, and they haven't beat Thomas Tuchel yet. But I think Chelsea definitely have their number. I know Chelsea's your team. You love Chelsea. What have you seen this year from them that has made them look promising to win the Champions League final?
Just the style of play and just how they play with each other and just how passionate they are. I know they've come off a few cup, you know, tough losses for some pretty good teams, also in the FA Cup final. But I don't think that, you know, is any sort of telltale sign of what's to come in the future. I know, I think, as he says, you said, you know, they've lost minimal games under Tuchel, who has been phenomenal, you know, getting them to play together, move the ball, pass well. And then you also have, you know, the depth of the team is so good. You have, you know, Pulisic coming off the bench. You have Reece James coming off the bench. You can have Giroud coming off the bench. You just have so many of these great players and so much depth that, you know, making a late run and making a run in the Champions League final, I think it's going to be tough to beat them, especially, you know, under a coach that knows how to play, you know, against Man City and a team that has struggled against Chelsea this far this year.
So I'm going to give my prediction. I might be totally wrong, but I think we're going to see another 2-1 to Chelsea, and we're going to see about a 70th minute goal from either Giroud or Pulisic. What's your prediction for the game?
I think it's going to be 2-0 Chelsea. I think they're going to score early. And then I think that with Man City pushing in the later, you know, stage of the game, that they're going to get another one. And I think, you know, Mendy's just been so solid back there. I just don't think he's going to concede.
And I think, you know, Mendy's still got a lot to prove. He's been one of the better goalkeepers in the Premier League since he's come to Chelsea last summer. And, you know, Chelsea is a little bit of a slump right now. As you said, they lost to Arsenal, and then they lost to Leicester in the FA Cup final. But, you know, they're definitely still hungry. They're not putting their heads down, and they definitely think they can win this Champions League final. But now looking towards Champions League for next year in terms of qualification from the Premier League, Leicester and Chelsea, they should qualify behind Man City United, who both have already have guaranteed UCL spots next year. But if Liverpool wins out, they've already won that game on Sunday against West Brom. Alisson came into the box. It was 1-1, came down 95th minute, scored a header. Unbelievable scenes. So now Liverpool just got to win out, and either Chelsea or Leicester have to drop points. And they actually play today on Tuesday. So the result of that game could really depend on who makes the UCL next year. You know, Liverpool, Leicester, Chelsea, one of those teams isn't going to make it. And that's why, you know, the title's already over. City's got it, but that's what makes this whole thing so fun. It could come down to the last day to see who's going to get that fourth spot for the Champions League next year. And it's such a huge financial advantage for clubs that do make the Champions League rather than Europa League. So it really does mean a lot in the football world. So now that we're, you know, on the topic of Champions League, we got to talk about the aftermath of the Super League and the fan protests that have resulted from that. You had a Liverpool versus Man United game actually being postponed because of how bad protests it got outside of Old Trafford. And all the clubs besides Barcelona, Madrid, and Juventus have pulled from the Super League. There are 12 clubs, 9 of them pulled out. But, you know, Barcelona, Madrid, Juventus, they're all in huge debt. You know, they spent a lot of money on players. They haven't made a lot of profit because of fans not being allowed to come to stadiums because of COVID. So, you know, they're not wanting to pull out of the Super League yet. And that, you know, that could really hurt them because UEFA is bound to take punishment on them. So does that mean that we're not going to see Messi or Ronaldo in Champions League next year? Does Ronaldo try to go on a move? You know, speaking of people going on a move, there's rumors today that Harry Kane might leave Tottenham next year. And, you know, I'm a United fan. I'll always advocate for a good striker to come to Man U. But why do you think Harry Kane coming to Chelsea either makes sense or doesn't make sense?
I don't think it makes sense at all, just because, you know, I don't think he'd fit in with their style of play and just, you know, the chemistry of the team. And two, Chelsea's so strong up top, you know, with Pulisic, they're so young that I don't think we need someone like Harry Kane coming in, maybe thinking, you know, he's a little better than everybody else, stealing that spotlight a little bit. So I definitely think that, you know, maybe it would be good, but in the long run, I feel like they should just keep, you know, developing their young players, continue to develop their young players and just go with what they got because it's working so far.
And I like that take. And it's an interesting dynamic because it looks like, you know, Man United, Chelsea, Man City are all the front runners to get Harry Kane if he does end up leaving. But with Man City, again, they spent so much money on players in the last couple of years. I think just on their back line alone, they spent 200 million euros or something like that. You know, there's talks about them getting Erling Haaland. So if they get Haaland, they don't even need Kane. So Kane's an interesting situation, especially now that he's voiced that he wants out. All right, moving on to the next topic of the day. We got NHL playoffs. It's one of the most exciting traditions in sports. You know, we've seen insane first round upsets in the last couple of years. We could see more this year. First question for you, though, is how much do you think winning the President's Trophy matters for Colorado? They're up 1-0 in the series. They just beat St. Louis tonight. So they're rolling with confidence. But how much do you think them winning the President's Trophy instead of the Knights matters for the Avalanche?
Well, first of all, them winning it means that they get to play, you know, obviously the lower seed, which is working for them so far. They're playing a St. Louis team who's not as strong this year. Obviously, you know, I'm a Knights fan, so I'm biased, so I much rather would have played St. Louis. I think that the Knights having to play Minnesota is definitely a little tough, especially since they've, you know, had their number all year. But with Colorado, I think that, you know, they could definitely use it going into the later rounds and later stages of the playoffs because, you know, President's Trophy, the number one in points, so they'll most likely always get home advantage. And so especially going up against hopefully a strong Knights team in the second round and then, you know, just stronger teams in the later rounds, that it's really going to prove beneficial for them to have those games at home.
Yeah, and we've seen how much goaltenders matter for teams trying to make a run in the Stanley Cup. Goaltenders can literally put teams in their back. We saw last year Thatcher Demko coming in for the Canucks, almost helped leading the Canucks to an insane comeback, 3-1 comeback against the Knights. And he was making, 48, 50 saves a game. And then the Knights came up against Anton Khudobin in the Western Conference Finals. He played an outstanding series as well. Probably was the reason the Stars won that series. And this year, I think it's on the Knights' advantage. They have they had the best goaltending tandem in the league this year, with Robin Leonard and Marc-Andre Fleury, the least, I think, goals allowed in the league this year. So Fleury was, you know, he was great in that game one against Minnesota. Didn't go their way. They lost 1-0 in overtime. But it's an interesting dynamic for the Knights, because as good as their goaltending and defense are, it just seems like they can't put the puck in the back of the net in the playoffs. And we saw the struggle last year as well. So how do you think something like that gets turned around? You know, does it have to be guys like Stone stepping up, Marchessault? What do you think?
Well, I think having Pacioretty back definitely helped, as well as some of those guys also stepping up. I mean, I think one of the statistics from the other night was that Stone was only one of the only players in the third period that had not taken a shot on goal, when he had been, you know, the main guy to score and the main guy to step up all year. So I think he definitely needs to step up along with the rest of the first line. I also think that, you know, the goalie thing is big, because, you know, the Minnesota goalie played a tremendous game, but I don't think that he can, you know, continue to carry that streak with getting 40 plus shots on him a night. You get tired, you get, you know, run down. And so I think the fact that, you know, even if, you know, Fleury's tired, that we can just sub in Leonard, who is fresh and can keep us in the game. So I think that as long as we just keep hammering the shots, getting them on net, and having the big players step up, we should be able to put a few in the back of the net and hopefully take the series.
Yeah, and Cam Talbot, he's a great goaltender. You got to give him that. But their other option just, you know, is nowhere near as good as either Leonard or Fleury. And so, you know, Fleury's putting all his energy into these games. And, you know, if it does come up with a good result and he needs a break, Leonard could come in and produce as well. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the rest of the series against Minnesota. But I know we're talking about the West a lot. There are three other divisions in the Stanley Cup playoffs as well. And it's a really interesting playoff bracket this year. It's one that we never seen before. There will be no Eastern Conference or Western Conference championship like there's always been. You pretty much have the West. You have two series in the West, two in the East, two in the North, and two in the Central. And then you have pretty much what you could call a conference final, I guess, or more just a semifinal of the Stanley Cup. You're going to have a West team versus an East team, and then North versus Central. You know, we've never seen something like that before. So potentially whoever gets out of the West, you know, Colorado, Minnesota, Vegas, St. Louis, will see a powerhouse like Boston, Washington, and I think New York and in Pittsburgh. So, you know, the East is, you know, obviously probably the best division in hockey this year. So whoever comes out there, I think, is definitely a strong favorite to win the cup this year. But, you know, Colorado and Vegas, they're 1-2 this year. They're right there. But again, they haven't played any teams from any other divisions. Teams only played against other teams in their division this year. So I think there's no clear-cut favorite for anyone to win the Stanley Cup this year. I think it's very open to all 16 teams who are competing. You know, obviously we're biased Knights fans. We're always going to want to believe that they're going to be the ones on top. But if you didn't think the Knights are going to end up on top, who do you think that other team will be?
Colorado, probably. You know, I just think that coming out of, you know, this division and having to compete with teams such as the Knights and the Wild and the Blues, I feel like they could be a team to carry it all the way, especially with McKinnon and just the powerhouse forwards that they have. I feel like, you know, even up against like a tough Boston team or a tough Lightning team or a tough Washington team, I think that Colorado, if not Vegas, will take it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, a lot of people are sleeping on teams like Tampa Bay or Toronto because, I mean, obviously we live in a Western region. We don't hear much from those teams. But the Lightning, surprisingly, they weren't expecting to have Nikita Kucherov back this year, but he's back. He had 2 goals in that game one against Florida, and they've got arguably the best goaltender in the league and Vasilevsky. So I think it's really open to anyone. I don't know if Colorado's strong enough to beat a really good team from the East or even from the North. So that's why I disagree with you there. I just don't think they're well-rounded enough. Obviously, McKinnon's one of the best in the league. But when you come up against such a well-balanced team like, you know, Austin Matthews with Toronto or Kucherov, as I said, with Tampa Bay, it's very hard to beat teams like that. So I honestly see maybe Tampa Bay getting back-to-back championship. You know, they are the defending champs. People tend to forget that. So I think that they're going to come up on top again. All right, moving on from the NHL. This is what you're kind of specialist in. We got college basketball. It was a great tournament, really great tournament. A lot of upsets. UCLA make it to the Final Four, upsetting Michigan in the Elite Eight. My brother actually goes to Michigan, so he's going to be a little bit biased in his opinion towards them. But those top programs that are there this year, they're going to be right back next year. I think UCLA, Gonzaga, Michigan will probably be 1, 2, and 3 throughout most of the year. But you also have the Blue Bloods. They're making a comeback as well. Duke and Kentucky were not very good this year. Neither one made the tournament. Kentucky was actually horrible. Duke was there. Duke was right there, but they ended up having to get out of the ACC tournament because of COVID issues, so they weren't eligible to be in the NCAA tournament. I don't think they would have got selected anyways. But we'll see those Blue Bloods back next year. You know, Duke's got the third-ranked recruiting class in the country with Paolo Banchero. He's second in the country. He's coming in at 6'9", as a power forward, along with two other five stars, and A.J. Griffin, who's 15th in the country, and Trevor Keels, who's 19th in the country. You know, I think this is probably the best group we've seen from Duke since Zion, Barrett, and Cam Reddish. And then also with Kentucky, they're the 6th-ranked recruiting class, and they're led by Ty Washington, who recently committed as the 11th-ranked player in the country. He's also the third-best point guard in the country and fills a much-needed position at Kentucky. They also have Damian Collins coming in as a 6'9". Five-star, he's 12th in the country, and he'll add great size and athleticism to a much-improved Kentucky team. Also bringing in good transfers from West Virginia, Davidson, Iowa. And you got Gonzaga. A lot of people thought they would have their undefeated season. They were right there until the national championship game where they got blown out by Baylor. But they had the best player coming in the country coming in with 7-foot versatile Chet Holmgren. He's a beast. Skinny dude, I think he's only like 190, which is insane for being 7-foot tall. But he's coming from the same high school in Minnesota that Jalen Suggs played at. They also have Hunter Silas, who's another five-star. He's ranked 18th in the country. He's coming into Gonzaga, and he should have an immediate impact on the Zags, who also have Nembhard and Anton Watson returning, who both were great for the Zags throughout the season in the tournament. And, you know, you got to love the mustache guy, Drew Timmy. He's also expected to return. He averaged a stellar 19 points and 7 rebounds last year for the Zags and was arguably their most important player in the tournament. Now we got Michigan. They have no doubt the most insane recruiting class we've seen in a very long time. First ranked recruiting class in the country, way ahead of Tennessee, who's at second. They got 2 5-stars, 3 4-stars. Tell us what you know, Everett. This is one of the most insane recruiting classes I've seen, and you have really good players coming back as well. Tell me what you're going to expect from this team next year.
So, yeah, I'm definitely going to be a little biased because I am, you know, a Wolverine. But Michigan, you know, the number one first-ranked recruiting class. We got 2 5-stars, 3 4-stars, and, you know, Caleb Houston, Musa Diabate, Kobe Bufkin, Frankie Collins, just phenomenal players coming into our program. And then, you know, we can't forget that we also have, you know, Devontae Jones, who's transferring from Coastal Carolina, who averaged 19 points per game last season as a junior. He's bringing in sort of that senior leadership, that, you know, that senior experience. We also have Eli Brooks coming back, who, you know, has made runs in the tournament and who is going to be, you know, playing a big role filling in for Mike Smith, one of the other guards. You also have Dickinson coming back, who is arguably one of the best players in the Big Ten as a freshman. He was, you know, he tore it up this season. And he's just pretty much unstoppable, even against, you know, some of the bigger guys on teams like Ohio State. I like to see who, you know, the class we are bringing in. I like to see what Juwan Howard has done. We also have a lot of young players on the bench, and Zeb Jackson and Jace Howard, who are going to continue to grow in the program and continue to come back. You also have Brandon Johns Jr. and Terrence Williams, both who are older players who are going to come back. And so I think we have a great mix of, you know, those new players coming in, younger players who have a year or two of experience. Then you also have, you know, seasoned veterans and Eli Brooks and Devontae Jones and Brandon Johns, who hopefully will lead, you know, the Wolverines to a national championship this year. I know I was hoping for, and everybody, you know, might have thought that it was going to come last year, fell short. But I have no doubt that if we play at the level that we played at in the season, you know, last season, and even better with all these new recruits coming in, that I'm very confident that we could bring a national championship back to Ann Arbor.
So I have a question for you. How much better do you think this team is going to be next year than they were last year? Do you think it better or just different?
Oh, I think much better because, you know, last season, yes, it did help having the leadership of Mike Smith and players like Shondi Brown and Isaiah Livers. But even, you know, with the loss of Livers and some of these players, the talent coming in is no sort of decline. If anything, it's far better players who are coming in and far younger. You know, and, you know, we have good forwards, great guards, younger players as well. And I think that's what you sort of need later on in the tournament, is you need a little bit of, you know, spark. You need a little bit of youngness in the team to help, you know, counterbalance and act with those older guys, so that you're not just having all the older guys doing the work or having all the younger guys doing the work.
Yeah, and we've seen in the tournament, you got to have a balance of both. If you're too young, you can have all the five stars you want, but if you got a full freshman, sophomore starting five, you're going to get upset against these older teams. You can come up against, if you're a 3 seed and you come up against a really good 14 seed, but they have all seniors, that could very much go to the 14 seed. So I think that's what's going to make Michigan so good next year, is they have that really good balance of really young, of young players, young freshmen coming in, who are 5 stars, really good. But then you also have really good returning players who are going to be able to lead that team as well. Speaking of players returning, you know, got my UCLA Bruins. So I'm going to be biased towards them. You know, they had no seniors last year, which is crazy. They made it to the Final Four without any seniors playing in the tournament. They had Chris Smith, but he was injured in early January. So, but he actually could return for a fifth year because of the COVID rule that allows seniors another year. So everyone's returning to UCLA next year besides John Juzang, who made the all-tournament team and is expected to go late first round in the draft. He was spectacular in that final stretch for the Bruins. But they have Peyton Watson coming in. He's a 5-star. He's ranked 8th in the country right now as a 6'8 small forward. Great size. And I think he'll be the guy to fill in for Juzang's stellar play towards the end of last season. Then, you know, Bruins also have 4-star Will McClendon coming out of Bishop Gorman. He'll add good defense and shooting, which is exactly what Mick Cronin loves in his system. So that's what we got for college basketball. Staying on the topic of basketball, let's talk about Russell Westbrook. That dude has been something else this year. And I know you're a big Westbrook fan. You know, when he was first playing with the Thunder, I know you're still a Westbrook fan. But, you know, he got the record for most triple-doubles in NBA history. 182, past the Oscar Robertson. But, you know, I think he's a dude that's more than just stats, and he'll probably be one of the most underrated point guards ever, just because he probably won't win a championship. What are your thoughts on his legacy and how much more triple-doubles mean to the kind of player he is?
Well, I mean, he's a fantastic player, especially, obviously, he set the record for the most triple-doubles. But, you know, I gotta say that he will be go down as a more underappreciated and more underrated than he should, just for the pure reason that I don't think he's ever going to get that championship unless he goes to a team, obviously, that will, you know, bring him that championship and surrounds himself with those players. And I just don't think that the Wizards are exactly going to be the team, championship caliber team, no matter how good Westbrook is. I think in terms of his legacy, again, he's going to go down as one of the greatest. You know, the stats show it, his number of triple-doubles show it. However, you know, unless he gets over that hump and wins a championship, I don't think that he's going to continue the legacy as, you know, fruitful or as, you know, likely as he would hope in terms of that. You know, just if you don't have a championship, you're just going to be overlooked and sort of underrated.
Yeah, and here's the thing. He actually is probably going to be in the playoffs this year. The Wizards somehow made a spectacular run towards the end of the season. I think won 9-1. In a 10-game span towards the end of the season. So they're right now they're the 8th seed going into the play-in tournament. And the play-in tournament, it's really interesting. The format, you have a 7-8 in both the Eastern and Western conferences, and then the loser of that game plays the winner of the 9-10 seed for the 8th seed. So it really is open to anyone. For example, you have Boston and L.A., both historic franchises, both 7 seeds going into the playoff tournaments, and all it takes is 2 losses, and you're not even in the playoffs. You're done. So I think it'll be interesting to see how, you know, the defending champs and the Lakers will have to overcome the odds of being a 7th seed or worse, and also playing an extra game or 2 extra games in the play-in tournament. So, you know, I'm really asking myself if they could realistically make another run. I'm not sure. You know, they definitely have better depth when they're healthy, which they've really struggled with this year. I think LeBron and AD have only played like 28 games or something together this year. But I think everyone should be good to go by the start of the play-in. But it's also easy to forget that they're coming off the shortest offseason ever, and are the team everyone wants to throw. So, you know, everyone's coming for the Lakers' blood. And, you know, they need to rely more on paint play as they still aren't shooting three very well. They haven't since LeBron's been there. I don't know. You know, I don't think that's his fault. They just never had a team around him that shot very well in L.A. The Lakers had 86 points in the paint last week, most in franchise history in their game against Houston. Drummond is starting to adapt, but I'd also like to see Marc Gasol get more minutes because of playmaking experience. I don't know how much you watch the NBA, but based on what you've seen this year, who do you think is the favorite to win it?
So, yeah, no, I have not watched a lot of the NBA at all. I know that, you know, the fan favorites and people, the teams who thought, you know, the people thought were going to win it all are not doing as hot, you know, as they hoped they would have. You know, the Lakers coming in as a 7 seed, as they said, you know, Golden State coming in as an 8, Boston coming in as a 7th. That being said, I honestly feel like the New York Knicks could make a run behind just the powerhouse of Julius Randle. They're carrying the momentum, and I honestly feel like, you know, you're laughing at me right now, but I feel like later on in the stretch, they don't have, you know, who do they play? Like Atlanta and teams that I feel like they can just go past, and especially with the momentum and the fans coming back into the arenas, and again, behind the playness and just the fantastic ability of Julius Randle, I would not be surprised if the Knicks were able to hang a bad banner in Madison Square Garden.
Okay, my first thought to that is that you were absolutely crazy, and that's the most interesting take I've ever had on my show. But now that I'm thinking about it, I think they will beat Atlanta in the first round. And you have a team that's that young and has been healthy the whole year, that's playing with the chemistry they've had, arguably the best chemistry among young players in the NBA. Could they beat the Milwaukees, the Sixers, the Nets? Here's the thing, you only got to win 4 games. Is it unreasonable? Maybe. Could the Knicks team really outmatch the Nets if Harden, KD, Kyrie are all playing? I don't think so. But obviously, you're entitled to your opinion. I don't think you're totally crazy, so I'm not going to totally get on you for that. But, you know, the Knicks are 100% on sleeper team this year. They haven't finished as well in years, you know, since Carmelo's been there. So just as a basketball fan in general, it's great to see the Knicks be up towards the top again. But respectfully, they're not going to win it this year. last topic about basketball for the NBA, we got the debate. We got Curry versus Jokic. They're both leading somewhat depleted teams this year, but at the end of the day, the Jokic Nuggets are in 4th while the Warriors are in 8th. And that's unfortunately, I think, what's going to define the two, who's going to win MVP or not. And I, you know, team success definitely plays a factor into that. You know, you got to give credit to Jokic if he does win. He's averaging 26.5 points, 11 rebounds, 8.5 assists, which is not too bad for a 284-pound unathletic big man who seems to want to play like a guard. You know, I'd love to see Curry win an MVP, but he won't. But I think this campaign was probably the best he's ever had, even better than those 2 MVP seasons because of how much his team needed him. You know, Klay Thompson was supposed to play this year, got injured again right before the season. He's really had to step up, and he has. He's averaging 32 points a game, which is the first in the league. He got the scoring title, and I think he's definitely reminded everyone why he's the best shooter and playmaker in the league. All right, we're going to wrap up the show today. Some final talk about NFL draft and what we can expect this season. You know, maybe a little bit of fantasy talk as well, and which rookies you should add to your team. So, first pick, Trevor Lawrence. And there's no doubt he'd be number one as soon as he started at Clemson and won the national championship as a freshman. He's exactly what a team like Jacksonville needed to boost their record of 1-15 from last year. And they also bring in his running back, Travis Etienne, who had a great career at Clemson. He's a very explosive running back who also can get some good plays in at wide receiver. Based on what you've seen from Trevor Lawrence throughout his college career, why do you think this is the right pick for Jacksonville?
Well, Jacksonville is horrendously bad. As we have seen, you know, their past season, their past records. And I feel like they need somebody like Trevor Lawrence who won, you know, hasn't lost a game, I don't think, ever. That can come in there, you know, get the locker room stirring and sort of just be like, come on, guys, you know. Like, this is our time. He doesn't like to lose, you know. He's not used to losing. He's used to winning. And so I think if you put the quarterback, you know, in there in the locker room on the field that wants to win and can push his teammates to do better as he has an entire career, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if Jacksonville had a surprisingly decent season.
Yeah, and I think if they win even 6-7 games, I think that's a much needed improvement from them. Same with the Jets. They need an improvement as well. I'm bringing in head coach Robert Saleh from for the 49ers. He was the defensive coordinator there, had one of the best defenses in the league in San Francisco. And although, you know, Zach Wilson's quarterback from BYU's offensive player, he's got a great arm. I think, you know, the Jets obviously needed a quarterback. They gave away Sam Darnold. You know, they were sold on Zach Wilson for a while. But I don't know if he's going to, you know, if he's going to live up to his expectations. He's a good player, but again, he didn't play very good teams in college. And his last year with BYU was his really only stellar season. So do you think Zach Wilson is a boom or a bust?
I think he'll be a boom. Just for the fact that, you know, just like you, a lot of other people are sort of hating on him a little bit and sort of down him. I think that he'll be surprisingly, he'll, you know, show out surprisingly well, especially on a team like the Jets where, you know, it's not very hard to shine. But yeah, no, I think he's going to be surprisingly well. He's going to do surprisingly well, and he's going to shock a lot of people.
Well, there's a lot more than him. Because of how bad the Jets have been these last couple of years, and there is on Trey Lance, who was taken by San Francisco with the third pick. They didn't have a great season last year. I think they were almost 500, so still not horrible, but they were just ridden by injuries. But everyone coming back, you know, Nick Bosa, Mostert, so many more on the defensive side, which made them so good and led them to the Super Bowl against the Chiefs 2 years ago. I think we're going to see another glimpse of that 49ers team. But first, they got to figure out what they're doing at quarterback. Is it going to be Trey Lance or Garoppolo? You know, I don't know enough about what that quarterback battle is going to be like. But from my opinion, I think maybe Jimmy G starts the first couple games, doesn't play very well, and I think Trey Lance comes in. What do you think will be more beneficial for the 49ers? Having experienced quarterback and Garoppolo has been to a Super Bowl, or having someone who's going to bring a lot more energy and entertainment to a 49ers offense like Trey Lance?
I think you just gotta sort of play it by ear, you know. I think we start the season with Jimmy G, someone to experience, and just see how he's riding and see how he's doing. If he doesn't perform at the level that it's expected, obviously you have Trey Lance, a great quarterback, who can come off the bench and just sort of bring that spark. I also wouldn't even mind the idea of them sort of splitting time in a way, just depending on the team who they play, because, you know, some teams Jimmy G will play better against based off of the defense, and some teams you're going to need a younger quarterback like Trey Lance, especially if you have sort of like a very good defensive line that'll be coming at the quarterback a lot. So I think you know, if you're the coach there, Shanahan, I think you just got to play it, you know, play it by ear, see what's happening, and then, you know, make your decision more in the game time rather than in the preseason.
Yeah, I think that could be very beneficial for them. That's a good take. There are some good quarterbacks in this draft. I'm not gonna lie. You know, you have Justin Fields going at 11. Bears trade up to get him, and he'll be in the QB room with Nick Foles and Andy Dalton. So he'll instantly improve with, you know, playing behind guys like that. And again, I think it could be similar to a Trey Lance situation where he doesn't start the first couple games and can maybe come in and bring a lot of energy to, you know, a more depleted Bears offense that hasn't looked that great with Mitch Trubisky the last couple years. You also got the Patriots, who didn't even have to move to get Mac Jones, you know, at the 15th pick. A lot of people thought maybe they would trade up to get him, but they didn't have to move. They fell right into their lap. So I think he will definitely be the successor of Cam Newton, who probably only has like a season or two left with New England. And, you know, he is most definitely a Belichick quarterback. I'm not going to compare him to Tom Brady, because Tom Brady is definitely the GOAT. And I don't think Mac Jones will live up to that, but he's that kind of style of quarterback who just stays in the pocket, finds the open guy. So I think that's perfect for what the Patriots needed. As much as we're talking about quarterbacks, you can't forget about the most athletic guys in this draft, and probably, you know, the most talented player we've seen in a while, most talented tight end we've seen in a while. So athletic, so big. Kyle Pitts, taken with the 4th pick by Atlanta. He's the highest tight end to ever be taken. He's 6'6", 250. He'll be one of the fastest tight ends in the league. He has great hands and size, and he'll be one of Matt Ryan's favorite targets. Again, the Falcons aren't very good. There's talks about Julio Jones leaving, but I think he'll definitely have immediate impact there. Same with Ja'Marr Chase going to the Bengals. You know, the Sewell was right there for them. They definitely needed a really good offensive tackle. But you're reuniting Ja'Marr Chase with Joe Burrow. So you can look at it either way. But do you think the Bengals should have taken offensive tackle there in Suo, or do you think it was right for them to take Ja'Marr Chase?
I think it was probably right for them to take Ja'Marr Chase. You know, I don't think that they would have benefited that greatly from an offensive lineman or offensive tackle. I just don't think that, you know, the Bengals, I think they need somebody, you know, first that can bring a spark to their team before, you know, adding people to sort of protect that spark.
And I partly agree with that. But again, that offensive line was so bad for the Bengals last year. And Joe Burrow got absolutely lit up. And you know, they were still able to draft a decent class after that with a couple offensive tackles. But Sewell was right there. And I think you could have got a wide receiver a little bit later. But who knows? Maybe those later offensive tackles they took, maybe they signed a couple more people with trade that can protect Burrow. But if Burrow's not protected, they have to bring in a backup and they're constantly dealing with injuries with him. The Bengals aren't going to be any good for a couple of years. But at least they figure out that part of the offense. You know, Chase caught 20 touchdowns from Joe Burrow in his historic Heisman season 2019. So that'll definitely bolster the Bengals offense, but they need a good offensive line or else they will suck. You have the Eagles. They also reunited a quarterback with a wide receiver. They had Jalen Hurts with Devontae Smith. Smith isn't the biggest receiver, but he's so quick and his route running is on another level, in my opinion. And I think that's a great pick for Philly. And you also have Jalen Waddle reuniting with his Alabama quarterback, Tua, in Miami. So it was, I think a lot of teams got what they needed in the NFL draft. Again, I think it's very open to any team that could win it this year. Obviously Tampa being the favorites, what they think all 22 starters returning or something like that. But then again, you got the Aaron Rodgers situation, with the Packers, he can end up leaving. So, I think it's very open to anybody. And I know you're going to be a little bit more biased. I can already guess what your prediction is going to be for who's going to win the Super Bowl next year. But let's just hear it.
The Browns.
And why is that?
I just think that they've been knocking on the door for so long. And especially after a pretty decent season last year, I feel like it's finally going to be their year to, you know, just push over that edge and get that Super Bowl ring that the city of Cleveland has been yearning for so long.
Here's the thing. I'm totally advocating for a Rams-Browns Super Bowl. That would be awesome. And again, the Browns were right there last year. They easily could, I won't say easily, but they were right there in that game against Kansas City to go into the AFC Championship game and probably could have won that game, but got a little bit screwed over by the refs. But I think they'll be out for revenge next year. All right. I know that was a lot, but thank you guys for tuning in. Any last thoughts, Everett?
I think that's it for me.
And don't forget to check out In-Depth Test Prep.
Yeah, go check us out. You know, test prep season's right around the corner. And even if you're an athlete, you know, an athlete's still got to take their standardized tests. So definitely go check it out. You're not going to find those good of prices, you know, anywhere else for that many resources. So, yeah, In-Depth Test Prep. Go check us out.
All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. Thanks for listening to my great guest on the show today. And we'll see you soon.